Welcome to MTG Pro Tutor, your gathering of insights, tips, and advice from renowned players and community icons. Connect with venerated teachers to gain the knowledge you need to improve your skills. Now, here's your planar guide and personal tutor, Sean Penrod.
Welcome back. This is episode 237 of the MTG Pro Tutor Podcast. I am Sean Penrod, your host. Thank you so much for joining me today. We have a great guest lined up, but before we dive into that interview, I want to say thank you so much to the supporters of the show, the sponsors of this episode. They are you, the patrons. Thank you so much for supporting the show directly. It really means the world to me that you keep the show going. At mtgprotutor.com/Patreon is where you can learn more about that. Basically, Patreon is a service that allows you to give back to the creators that you appreciate, that you like, that you resonate with, and you can set a monthly limit so you never go out of budget. The way that we have it set up is you set a dollar amount per episode, and then again, that monthly limit makes sure that you never break your budget. So thank you to all the current patrons. It really means a lot to me that you are contributing, and because of you, I'm able to hire out the show notes and the editing and keep this ship afloat. So thank you. Paragon City Games is the other proud sponsor of the show. They provide the prize support for our various events, as well as sponsor their own giveaways that we do every now and again. I love Paragon City Games and what they do and how they run their events. They're a shop located fairly close to me in Draper, Utah, and they actually have offered to give a free booster pack to any player who wears a MTG Pro Tutor t-shirt to the Ixalan pre-release or release events. So if you are in Utah for the pre-release or release of Ixalan and you want to get a free booster pack, then get a t-shirt at mtgprotutor.com/t-shirts if you don't already have one. Wear it to the event at Paragon City Games and get a free booster pack. How cool is that? Speaking of Paragon City Games providing prizes for the Prodigies, each and every month I do a monthly giveaway for patrons only. That includes some pretty sweet Magic the Gathering product that's always provided by Paragon City Games. And we also have a sealed league coming up for Ixalan. Every set, we love to do a Prodigy sealed league where you get to play Magic with the other listeners of the show. And we have it set up so that the first place wins a Ixalan bundle, which is provided by Paragon City Games. And then second place gets entry and a half to the next sealed league, which is valued at $24. Third and fourth place get their entry covered for the next league, which is valued at $16. And then fifth through eighth place get half of their entry covered for the next league, which is valued at $8 a piece. So if you're interested in joining this league, sign us up right now and we'll close on October 4th. You can go to mtgprotutor.com/sealed league. That's /sealed league if you want to jump in on that. Again, if you figure joining a league for $16 and getting to keep all the cards you open is a pretty sweet deal. And then on top of that, you have the chance of winning something if you make it into the top eight. So it's a lot of fun. We get to play again with the Prodigies, who are the cream of the crop when it comes to the Magic community. I love you. I love the listeners. I love interacting with Prodigies and how you are so kind and respectful and just here to have fun and learn and grow. And it's really a great time. So those who have done it before know it's a great experience. And I really look forward to welcoming some new faces to this Ixalan Sealed League. So check that out. Well, thanks so much for letting me keep you up to date with what we have going on. There's not a lot of competitive Magic events right now, so we're kind of at a lull with that. But we still have some great guests lined up. And today is no exception. So without further ado, let's bring in our guests, sit down and talk about Magic. What's up, everybody? I'm really excited to have our guest with us today. Our guest made top 16 of his first Pro Tour in Kyoto 2017. He's also made top 64 at GP Barcelona, and he dominates his local scene as the two-time Amonkhet Game Day champion and the Pharaoh's Block League champion for his city. Coming to us from Valencia, Spain, Prodigies near and far, let's welcome the one, the only, Sergio Ferrer. Sergio, how are you doing today?
Fine. I'm nice to be here. I'm really happy to be able to tell my experience to everyone, and I'm glad of it.
Yeah. Great. So you're ready to delve into your mind and share with the audience tips and tricks to take the game to the next level?
Yeah, for sure.
Excellent.
I will try my best.
Excellent. Now, Prodigies out there, if you want to connect with Sergio, you can find him on Twitter. He's at No S Me People. That's where you can find him, and just tweet out to him and say thanks for being on the show, ask him a question, but that is the best place to get a hold of him. So, Sergio, tell us a little bit about what you have going on outside of Magic right now. Are you a student? Do you work? Is Magic all you do? Tell us what you have going on.
I'm working as a developer. Yeah, I studied telecommunications, and then I was like 1 year trying to find my place in the world, like changing between three different jobs because I couldn't really find what I really like to do. And now I'm for 1 year in a Swedish company that is here in Valencia, and we are developing emergency applications, so I'm pretty happy right now.
Excellent. Did you go to university at all for that, or?
Yeah. It was an engineering.
Engineering. Wow. Very neat. And where did you go to school?
Here in Valencia, but I was actually a couple of years abroad. I went to Finland, to Helsinki for my Erasmus, and then I was half a year in Germany, doing some kind of internship in a company.
Well, that sounds like fun, getting out and traveling and seeing some other parts of Europe.
Yeah, and trying to improve my English. Even it's not really good, but I think about above Spanish average.
Excellent. Yeah, I think it's very good. Thank you for, coming onto the show and being willing to, talk and so excited. So we would love to learn about your origin story with the game. Like, where was the first time you ever saw or played Magic cards?
Yeah, I think my story is quite similar to most of the players. I used to play when I was a child, I don't know, in the school, maybe with 12, 13 years old. A friend of mine came to the school one day, showed me the cards, and I actually really like them so fast, like in a couple of hours, I decided to go to buy a Darksteel pre-construct deck after the school. And I was playing for, I don't know, like 3 years more or less. And then I realized that I wanted to go a bit farther. I would like to go to competitive tournaments, but I didn't have money. So I left Magic and then I came back like 3 years and a half ago, more or less, with Born of the Gods. Not the best collection to come back. But yeah. And at the beginning, I came like a casual player, like playing draft in my local store and playing like pre-release. And I don't know. I don't used to play much constructed. And then, I was getting a big pool of cards. And now I play almost every format.
Love it. And that's so cool. So a school friend introduced you to the game back in Darksteel, you said? Was that first set you went off and bought?
Yeah.
Nice. And so just within a couple of hours, you were hooked and got you into it. And that's so fun to hear how people, came in, the friends that introduced us to the games and, what we did back in the day. And so it's really neat. You had a similar story to many where you kind of went in and out and came back, and 3.5 years ago you hit it hard, and now here you are doing great things. So that is really, really fun. What's been your favorite set?
Wow. Actually, for drafting, I really enjoy Amonkhet and Amonkhet plus Other Revolt. But in general, it's hard to say. I don't know.
Amonkhet's a good one. That's been a really fun set for limited, from what people say.
I think mostly in limited because it's the format I enjoy the most. Cool. So but I don't know, there are some good sets for constructed. I remember with some kind of, I don't know, like sweetness, the Darksteel block, well, the Mirrodin block, because it was my first introduction to Magic. Yeah, and you could do quite degenerate things with Affinity in Constructed.
Nice. So what's one of your favorite cards?
Well, if I can choose whatever, Ancestral Recall. But in the last years, I really like Cryptic Command, Ashiok. Ashiok is, I think, my favorite Planeswalker. It's maybe not the best one, but I really enjoy it.
Yeah, so let's go with Ashiok. So tell us, what is Ashiok? What does it do? And why do you like it?
Well, it's a 3-mana Planeswalker. It costs you 1 colorless, 1 blue and 1 black. And it has 3 abilities. It comes with 3 counters and with +2. You exile the top 3 cards of the deck of your opponent. And then you get all the creatures under Ashiok. And with the second ability, it's -X. You can remove X counters where X is the number, then convert the mana cost of one of the creatures you got from the other deck, and you can put it into play for free. And then the last one, I actually don't remember. I think it's -10, but I don't remember the exact number. And you just exile the hand and the graveyard of your opponent. So,
yep. Yeah, crazy. Yeah.
Cool. And I have it in my mind and I like it because I enjoy it a lot playing a Sultai deck. It was quite similar of one deck that Gerard Fabiano make top 8 or something in a GP. And I was playing it for a long, long time in Standard and I enjoy it a lot. Just the time that you win with that Planeswalker, because your opponent fix it to kill him, and maybe it was enough for you to resolve a massive removal or something and get the game.
Yeah, such a good card. And I played against a friend of mine who had Ashiok in their standard deck back when that was around. And man, yeah, just getting your stuff exiled and then having them bringing it into play under their control was always like, oh man, what are we gonna do? So
yeah,
so well. Fun. That's good stuff. So when you came back into Magic and you started getting, you know, serious with it, what was an early challenge that you struggled with but that you eventually overcame?
Well, it can sound funny, but maybe the game day, because I have been playing game days from the beginning of my comeback to Magic, and I couldn't never win one. I mean, I did top eights or things like that, but I could never get the victory and the playmat. And yeah, I finally got it before. I don't remember the collection, but I think it was with the Atarkas Red in Standard. So It should be like, yeah, maybe Dragons of Tarkir or the one before. I don't know.
What did you do to get to that point? So you said that you started out by making top eight, but never quite getting there, and then you finally won. What did you do? How did you improve so you can actually take down a game day?
Well, I think the most important thing is to test and to have a nice group. I mean, you have two alternatives. You have Magic Online, which is maybe the most useful and powerful tool for playing and learning Magic in a high level, I mean. But at the beginning, I think it's very important to have a group of friends who likes Magic as much as you, because in that way you can learn with each other, you can speak about the different plays that you would do in a particular situation. And I think that is very, very useful for improving in the game.
Love it. So just practicing constantly, either online or with friends, and making sure that you have friends who love the game as much as you and are, you know, willing to play as much and as hard as you, and that you can talk with. Like, that really helps.
Yeah, exactly. Comment each play that you have a question, ask the question, because maybe another person has a totally different point of view of what to do, and maybe that one is the correct and not yours, or vice versa, and you can learn from each other. So that's really, really important.
So cool. So what have been some of your milestones in Magic? You know, so you took down the game day. What other events can you look back on and pick out as you have improved all the way up to your top 16?
Yeah, after the thing with the game day, I had the same feeling with the PPTQs.
Okay.
Because, I actually played a couple of old PTQs, but, I was really, really new in Magic, and my experience was not really good. I top 8 one, but I think I was pretty lucky. But then, after the game day, it came to the PPTQs. I had the same feeling. I could make top 8, but I always lost before the finals. And I don't know, maybe in one season I could top 8 like 6, but lose the 6 top 8s, and I was a bit frustrated because you see yourself really close but never reaching the goal. And but finally you play a deck a lot, you kind of master it, and one day you have a bit of extra luck and you get to the point, because at the end, even if you are the best player of the world, you need a bit of luck for winning a kind of big tournament. At least not good luck, but not having bad luck. Like if you are in the finals and then suddenly you have to mulligan to 4, you are almost lost and you cannot do anything.
Dang.
Yeah, and then after the PPTQ, I went to a couple or 3 regionals, and they weren't really well. The first one, I hadn't prepared really good, so because I was just finished the university, I started a new job, and I hadn't much time. And in that one, I don't know, but the result was pretty, pretty bad. Then the next one was Modern, and I was testing the Dredge a lot with the Golgari Grave Troll. I think it was a couple of weeks before the bans. And I was really, really tested the deck, but I arrived there and I did O2 drop because The first round, I remember, it was against Gorgeous, and he comboed me in the second turn, both games. Okay, good game, well played.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah, and the second round I play against a guy who had like Ghostly Prisons and Snarling Breach main deck, and I couldn't do anything. And rough. Yeah, again, the frustration, like, wow, this tournament I have been really preparing a lot. I have played a lot of hours, and then I arrive here. I play against tier 2, tier 3 decks, and they beat me really hard. And yeah, and finally, yeah, in my third regional, I got the place for the PT. It was Sealed, a Monkhead. And yeah, I was just closing my fingers and saying, please, I want a playable pool. I don't mind if I don't have bombs, but I want a playable pool. And I had a really, really good red-white aggro with one bomb, actually. And I managed to go to the top 8. And then in the top 8, I did also really good draft, I think, and my deck was pretty strong, and I could beat my opponent not easily, but it was not that much difficult compared with other games during the day.
That's so neat. I love hearing that progression, you kind of what you went through to get there. And I want to specifically hone in on the times that, for example, you went, you practiced really hard, and then you got beat by, tier 2, tier 3 decks, and, O2 and leave. How did you improve from that? Like, what was your takeaway? What did you learn? How did you get over that frustration? Because many of us go through similar experiences where we practice a lot, we might drive a long way to an event, and then, we're out in the first couple rounds. And so there's all those feelings of frustration, and I practiced, and I tried. And so what did you do to, move past that and to become a better player?
I try to remember that it's a game, that I'm not living from it. I mean, even if I lose at the game, I'm going to have bread in my table, so it's not a problem for me in that sense. And one thing that I do, I don't know if it's correct or not, but it works for me, is to play the formats that I enjoy the most, which are cube and then strange formats. Like, for example, now I was practicing Modern because we have in Spain a GP next December, Modern Trios, and I have been playing a lot of Storm, but other of my mates in the team is also a Storm player, so one of we have to find another deck. And I was testing Grixis Shadow. I was losing a lot, like I had 47% win rate, because another thing that I think is important, I used to take notes of my matchups, against whom I lose, against who I win, I don't know, just to take statistics and maybe improve your side or whatever. And yeah, I was a bit upset with my win rate in Modern because I couldn't find a deck. I win a lot, so I say, yeah, I have time. The tournament is in December. Let's just enjoy Magic, because this is a game I play for enjoying. And I saw that they put like World Wake Standard, and I'm like 1 week addicted to that tournament. Yeah, I'm playing them a lot. And yeah, when there is cube, I play cube a lot. When I have to forget, like, I'm playing to compete and I'm playing to win, yeah, I want to forget that. I want to play for fun. And that's the best way to do it, I think.
Yeah, it's so important to remember, it is a game, and the more you play for fun, I feel the better you do. When people get so up, wound up, and I have to do well, and I have to win, and all this stuff, then one, they stop having fun, and I think they perform worse. We've heard so many stories of guests who had similar experiences where when they step back and just kind of let go of the pressure and said, "I'm just going to show up and do my best and have a good time," they actually ended up doing better. So I think it's really interesting how we kind of get in our own heads and psych ourselves out trying to just focusing so hard on the win. So that's really, really important. So you made it to the Pro Tour off of the regionals, is that right?
Yeah, that's
awesome.
Right.
And so tell us about your first Pro Tour. What was that like? And you ended up in the top 16, which is really cool, of your first Pro Tour. So tell us that experience and what was the format and what you did, and share some stories from there.
Well, first of all, I was practicing a lot of drafts. I was drafting as much as I can in MTGO, with one of my best friends in Magic, and he's also an expert in Limited. He qualified actually for the Pro Tour in Australia, in Sydney, last year. And he helped me a lot for this tournament because we sat down in Skype and we just talk each other, what's the pick here, why do you choose this card before it, instead of that other card, and then also the plays, like, because I think that there is a point in Magic that it's not just like I did a misplay or I did not a misplay, it's more like what role I have in the game. I am the aggressor, I am the defensor. That is probably the most difficult thing to see, at least for me. And it's very important in Limited because sometimes you lose a game because you risk too much in an attack and you had to be the defensor or vice versa. Mm-hmm. And yeah, I think that sometimes that's something that you cannot learn by yourself because, I mean, if you throw a ball to a 3-3 Melfork and they have a Beal and they put another Melfork, another Lord, and the Lord is a 4-4, okay, you learn the lesson. But the other thing is a bit more difficult to see by yourself, and I think it's really important to have a second eyes there and a second opinion and just discuss all the plays. And yeah, I was drafting a lot for the PT and left a bit the standard for later because we also had the Kyoto GP the week before. It was a limited. And I needed 2 pro points in the GP for getting the bronze, the new category they put, and not have to play more PPTQs. Mm-hmm. So I was really focusing in that. And yeah, then I played the GP. It was pretty fine. I did 11-4. I did not take money because we were a lot of people, but I took the 2 pro points that I needed.
Nice. So congrats.
Yeah, at that point, I was bronze. And yeah, and the next week, we started to prepare standard. And I was testing different decks. I didn't feel really comfortable with any of them. I was testing ramp. I was testing black-red control. I don't know. We were testing like 5 or 6 decks, and I couldn't find anything that feels like, okay, with this I can win the Pro Tour. I don't know. Or the feeling that, yeah, I can beat any matchup with this. So finally I decided to play Mardu because I was playing Mardu vehicles from the beginning of the deck, I think from Kalades, like 6 or 8 months, I don't remember. And yeah, I thought at least it's a deck that I have played a lot. I have been in a lot of the situations in the game more than one time. And I think I can do it better with this one. We started testing that and, I don't know, like tweaking the sideboard and the main deck. And we were seeing a lot of mono-reds in the online, but the problem that we had in the online was that the people was playing kind of a budget deck with cartouche and trial of the the red trial. And yeah, that version was not really good. And yeah, we beat that version a lot. We thought that we had a nice matchup against mono red, but then you don't play against people in MTGO with budget decks. You play against professionals with not budget decks.
Yeah.
And you see that, yeah, maybe mono red is not that good as matchup. So it was, I think, a poor decision for us because all the Spanish players that shared the same house as me, we all were on the same deck. We all were playing Mardu. And it was a disaster. Yeah. I mean, my friends did really bad in the standard portion of the PT. And I have the luck that I 6-0 in the draft part. So
wow,
that was really pushing me ahead in the tournament.
Yeah. Yeah.
Actually, I did an interview with Marcel because, yeah, he was also really excited. I think he was even more excited than me because I couldn't believe what I did. And he was like, yeah, you 6-0 your first Pro Tour. And I was like, yeah, I cannot even believe it.
That's so cool.
Yeah, and then I found myself finally playing for the win and into the top 8. And I was like, not even thinking at that. My opponent sit down in front of me and ask me like, this is a match for the top 8, right? And I thought, and it was, for myself, I said, yeah, it's a matchup for the top 8. But I couldn't even believe it because my expectation was like, yeah, I will try to do my best. Hopefully, I make day 2. And suddenly, I was playing the win and in for the top 8. Yeah, I lost that round. But yeah, I still was very happy. And yeah, it was curious because I was playing nearby. I mean, in my side was another Spanish player, Javier Dominguez.
He's a past guest of the show. He's been on the show before.
I will listen to him. I didn't know. And yeah, he lost also the round and he was like so sad. And I lost the round and I was so happy because my expectations were much below than where I was. So I mean, I didn't mind the loss at that point.
Yeah.
But he was playing for the Platinum. He was playing for the top 8. He has been doing a really good effort. And yeah, fortunately, we both win the last round and he got the Platinum. I got the Silver. So I got the invitation for the 2 next Pro Tours.
Dang, that's so cool. So you're going to the next 2 Pro Tours. So you got bronze the weekend before at the GP and then you made silver the very next weekend at the Pro Tour. That's great.
Yeah, yeah. It looks like if you do top 16 in the PT, you get a lot of pro points.
Oh, really? How many did you get?
I don't know. I think like 16 or something like that.
Oh, my goodness. That's...
Or 14. I don't know. I finished the season with 20-something. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So it's at least 14, I think.
Wow. That's awesome. Good job. Congratulations. And yeah, Javier Dominguez was episode 47. So... a while ago, so back in the day, but we're going to have him back on because, you know, he's been doing so well recently. We want to talk to him again, so that's really cool. So, man, so you're silver. So I was going to ask you about, you know, who you prepared with because it was your first Pro Tour, and you said that it was all the other Spanish players that had qualified for the Pro Tour. Is that right?
Yeah, exactly. Cool. Yeah, actually, the limited part, I tested with a friend in Spain. His name is Juan Guillenea. And then, yeah, for the standard part, mostly with the people in the house.
Cool.
Then also online, but yeah, we sat down like 2 people in each computer. We try to figure out the best place.
Oh, time. Good. Very good. Yeah. And now that you're qualified for the next 2 Pro Tours, what's the plan for testing? Are you going to be with the same people? Are you getting onto one of the, like a team, or what's that going to look like for you?
Yeah, unfortunately, the people who went with me in the same house last time are not qualified this time. So I will be in a house with the people that is qualified from Spain this time, and I will hopefully practice with them. But this time I don't have that much holidays, so I cannot be there like 2 weeks before like I did in Japan. And yeah, I think I will have to focus more on the online than the last time and try to, I don't know, take time from anywhere to test before.
Yeah. And do you plan to participate in Worlds?
No. I would like, but it's really hard to qualify for that.
Is it?
I will play the Nationals in Spain. I think they are in October.
Okay.
And yeah, and I will try to qualify for the team.
Yeah. And that's all you can do, you know, you go to nationals, you do your best, and what happens, you know, maybe you'll have another run like you did at the Pro Tour. You never know.
Yeah. So. I mean, hopefully it works, but yeah, it's difficult.
And I love it. I love hearing, you know, your story and how you got there. And I would love to maybe dive into, you already shared, you know, really, you know, a hard time earlier on when you had those regionals that you were near misses, but we would love to dive into what you consider your worst magic moment and what you learned from that experience. Can you take us there and share another story of a time that was really hard for you?
Wow, that's a difficult question. I don't think I have really had a really, really bad magic moment, as it says, because I'm not playing kind of high level for a long time, but maybe after the PT, like 3 weeks after, because after the PT I played also a MOX tournament in online, and I did a perfect, and I did 8-0, and I was really happy, and I was kind of in a cloud, like, wow, I'm floating in the air, everything is going well for me in each tournament I play. But after that, it came the part I told you before, that I don't win anything in Modern. I play Standard and I lose almost every league. I do like 2-3, I lose all my ticks. And yeah, I can say that after the PT, I had a really hard time. And yeah, as I told you, I try to focus in the part that I most enjoy in Magic, like drafting cube with my friends or now playing this. And I think it's good to take air and to take with more fresh air the PT and the next preparation, because you don't want to be like overcome for the situation. I don't know if overcome is actually the correct verb in English, but it's kind of the meaning I try to say.
Yeah, overwhelmed.
Yeah, overwhelmed. Yeah, that's right. Thank you.
And, you know, the flip sides, you know, of our lows are the highs. So what's been your proudest Magic moment? Is it making this top 16 of the Pro Tour? Has that been your proudest moment?
Yeah, for sure. 100%. Yeah,
and that was such a fun story just to hear, you know, what that meant for you and, you know, making silver. And that's so cool to, yeah, just to kind of realize, you know, that dream to go to the Pro Tour and do so well. So yeah, absolutely. Absolutely love it.
Yeah.
So as go ahead.
Yeah, sure. No, I was going to say that it was a dream come true, because yeah, for me, it was actually a dream to go to the Pro Tour. It was like, yeah, maybe one day I can reach that level. Mm-hmm. And then suddenly you see yourself in the next two Pro Tours and wow, you are like, I don't know, it's a weird kind of happiness that I haven't experienced before in any kind of competition, because I have never played any other game like at this competitive level.
I love that. Now, as you've played Magic all over the world against hundreds of players, what is the biggest mistake that you have seen players make?
Maybe it's not a mistake, that a game mistake, but it's more like a psychological mistake. That is that when you make a wrong decision in one point of the game, you cannot stop thinking about that the rest of the game. And sometimes it leads you to more wrong plays and to more errors. And then you suddenly lose the round, and the next round you are thinking in the past round, like, wow, how can I be losing that? I don't know. I did a big mistake, and then it makes some kind of a chain and you start losing a lot because you cannot separate games or separate things in your head. It's like, okay, I did you have to say, I did a really great mistake, really big mistake, and okay, let's forget it. Let's try to do my best for the rest of the game, and let's try to avoid making more mistakes. I don't know.
Yeah, so they make a mistake and then they dwell on it, and then because they're just constantly thinking about it, it causes them to make more mistakes, like this chain reaction of misplays. So how do you avoid that? You know, like you said, you just tell yourself, okay, I made a mistake, kind of move on. But like, what does that look like? Is that all you really do? You just kind of mentally tell yourself, move on? Or how do you get past it?
Exactly. Yeah, I was going to say that. Yeah, I have like an internal voice that says to myself, focus, take air, don't think about that, focus, take like 20 seconds more, 10 seconds more, whatever you need for the next decision of the game, but don't throw it away. Actually, this week, I think, or last week, I have seen in Channel Fireball a really good article about all this topic. The article was written by Will Jonathan, and the name is Being Optimistic Doesn't Mean Being Delusional. And it's talking about all this, like, okay, you made an error, forget it, try to focus in the next step. Or also in another nice point that is, don't give the lag all the credits of your games. Like, don't think that if you lose is because you have bad luck. Okay, maybe in one game it occurs, but if you lose five games, it's really weird that you are having bad luck in the five games. Try to analyze the games deeper and try to get the errors, because it's the thing that you need to improve as a player. You cannot say all the time, like, yeah, I really had bad luck, or my opponent drew better than me. Yeah, sometimes it's going to be true, but it's not going to be true like the 70% of the time if it happens to you all the time.
Yeah, I love that. Just have that internal voice, you know, focus, breathe, like you said, you know, breathe, take 10, 20 more seconds, whatever you need. You know, yes, I made a mistake, but I can still recover. I can learn from it. Just breathe, focus, and move on. So just, yeah, by telling yourself that every time you know, think of that mistake, just, you know, move past it and, you know, practice that until it becomes second nature. And then you'll just be able to mentally handle those missteps and move on and recover. So that article does sound really cool. So thank you for sharing that. That's really neat.
Exactly.
That's really neat. So that's a mistake that you've observed other players make. What about you? What are you working on as a player, Sergio? How can you get better?
Well, first, I think that I need to improve my reading of the metagame, maybe, because when you go to your local store, you are used to know what each player plays because you know them, you know the decks. But in an open field, you have to study a bit more what you are going to expect or I don't know, kind of that. And that is what we did wrong in the last PT. And I think it's really important that me as a person and, I don't know, a group, if we are together, improve in that, because we were playing online, we were seeing a lot of mono red, but we thought, yeah, maybe there are not that much in the real life. Yeah, there were a lot, and we couldn't read that. That is a thing that I would like to improve. And then sometimes I feel that my opponent can read in my face or in my gestures what I drew. And I don't like that. And, you know, you have to be more poker face. And, yeah, I'm trying also to improve that, because my friends really tell me a lot of times, like, you have to take care of, I don't know, the face that you put or the ace or whatever, because we can really read in your face what you are drawing.
Really? Interesting.
Yeah, I mean, also it's because my friends know me, and I don't know, if you don't know me, it's harder to read, maybe because you don't know my normal reactions, but it seems that I do it often.
Yeah. Well, I mean, whether we know you or not, I think the advice of being more, yeah, even keeled is definitely good, because there are people who, even if they don't know you, they are pretty good at reading, you know, and that might, you just don't want to give away any more information than you possibly can, than you need to, right? So that's but that's good that you know that you have friends that point these things out to you, because sometimes we won't even know those things if we don't have somebody say, hey, by the way, like, your facial expressions kind of give away a lot, that we don't even know to work on that, you know? All right, so Sergio, what is your plan, you know, moving forward? So now that you know these things, what are you going to do to study the metagame better, to understand it? And what are you going to do to, you know, control the tells, your facial expressions, so people don't get more information?
Well, actually, for reading the metagame, I think that I need to look at more results at the last big tournaments. I think this is a really a big challenge before the Pro Tour, because there are not that much big tournaments with a new collection before the important tournament. But I don't know, maybe you have to trust more the Magic Online metagame. And if it's telling you, yeah, mono red is going to be played a lot, yeah, maybe it's true that it's going to play a lot. And another thing that it's really useful, I think, especially for this kind of tournament at the beginning of the season, is to try the decks with the people you trust. I mean, with people that you know that have a good level, because sometimes online or in your local game store, you play against I don't know, a bad player or a person who is still learning Magic or is kind of beginner, and you are right, you play and you see the matchup and you think, yeah, I think this matchup is pretty good. And it's not that the matchup is pretty good, it's that the other person is not playing at its at the best that they can offer, or I don't know how to say it.
Yep.
And yeah, and I think that it's really important. Yeah, it's more difficult for us because we don't live from Magic. We cannot spend all the time in the world playing Magic. And yeah, sometimes you just play online because you can play more matches in less time, but that doesn't guarantee you that you are going to play against the best players in the world all the time. So yeah, it's hard, but yeah, I think that you have to try to look the metagame of the past tournaments, try to figure out what people is going to bring to this one. Like, normally it's kind of a share between the winner of the last tournament or the top 8 of the last tournament plus the decks created to beat that decks. And then you have to make a choice there. And for my facial expressions, I don't know. I'm actually think improving in that because I just try to, you know, draw the card, don't look it that much, mix it with the hand instead of just another mistake that people make sometimes, or I think it's a mistake because you are giving free information, is like you keep one lander, for example, or you keep whatever hand and you draw a land from the top and you directly play it from the top and you are giving your opponent information like, okay, I just drew a land and you don't want that. Or especially if you have played something like a Serum Visions or a kind of a cantrip and you have scryed something to the top and then you play it directly from the top, you are giving a lot of information to your opponent, and I think that's something that you can control and something that I'm doing right now, and I think it helps to improve also with the facial expressions. Is just I drew the card, I mix it with the rest of the hand, and then I play from there.
That's a great idea. So then you don't spend time, you know, reading the card you just drew. You don't immediately play it, so they see that that's exactly what you drew. And yeah, that's a really good idea. Just put it in your hand real quick, mix up your hand, and then go from there and kind of, you know, take your turn as normal. I think that's a really good idea.
Exactly.
Yeah, cool. So, Sadia, what have you learned from Magic that you've been able to apply to other areas of your life?
Wow, some questions are really difficult. Okay, I think two things, more or less. One of them is that if you lose today, you can win tomorrow. Because sometimes in life it happens to you. Like, for example, at the beginning, when you finish your degree, you are in your beginning of job search. And sometimes you go to an interview and they say, we don't like you. But that doesn't mean that in the next interview, they are not going to like you.
Right.
Maybe you didn't qualify for that job for, I don't know, for any specific reason. Or maybe you just didn't like to the person who did the interview to you. And that is something that happens in Magic too. Like, yeah, you lose now, but maybe you win the next time, and it's going to be like that in the life. Also, you cannot win every match you play in your life, and you cannot win in every situation it happens in your normal life. And you have to go ahead and move forward. That is one thing, and the other thing, well, it's not something that I learned from Magic, but I think I got it from Magic, that it's a lot of good friends. I was in a kind of weird social situation when I came back to Magic because all my friends in the university were living in other countries. My friends from the high school were also doing like kind of their lives. And I was in a limbo of friendships. And and I started playing Magic, and now I have really, really good friends there. And I think that is something that you can take. And if you apply it to the real life, it's like, maybe doing something you can know people or good friends for the future to do more things like travels or whatever.
I love that. I love that about the Magic community, how you can move to pretty much any city, you know, especially any big city in the world, and start playing Magic there, and then find people who at least, you know, have one similar interest. And from there you can, you know, build genuine friendships. And yeah, I love that. Absolutely love the Magic community, how it's worldwide and you can find people who, you know, share your interests. And it's just so cool. Yeah. So cool.
And one thing that it's pretty curious for me of the Magic community, and I don't know if it actually happens in any other game or in something, is how people, doesn't matter to give you a deck for playing a tournament. It's like, when I started playing Magic again, I went to a Legacy tournament and I didn't have a deck. And yeah, one person that nowadays is a friend of mine, but in that time was not a friend, was just someone that I knew from the store, told me, yeah, I can give you this deck and you can play the tournament. Yeah, I'm not going to play, but you can give it to me next day. And I was like, man, this is 3,000 euros. Yeah, and he was like, yeah, no problem, you give me next day. I don't think that happens in a lot of places. And yeah, I think people know that the cars are expensive, but sometimes they don't think in the value of the deck when they are borrowing it to mm-hmm. someone. Mm-hmm. It's just like, yeah, okay, I give you this, and another day you can give me one of your decks. Mm-hmm. It's not a problem for mm-hmm. us.
Yeah, that's so, I love it. Yeah, I just love that. I love that about our community. I think it's really, really neat. So, well, as we kind of pull into the end here, what are some Magic-related resources you can point us to? Like, where do you turn to when you're keeping up on what's going on?
In Spanish, I used to read Show and Tell MTG. It's a group that, I don't know, I think they are like 1 year and 1 year and a half active. They write a lot of articles a week. They comment some strategies or decks or things. And moxes.com is also another Spanish website that I used to read. And then I like a lot Channel Fireball. I used to read their articles. I used to watch their videos. Sometimes also Star City Games or TCG Player, but a bit less. And yeah, I created a group in Facebook that I share with some friends here in Valencia, and we normally share if we find a fine article. For example, this one I sent to you, or I talked before. I like it and I share it, and people share articles from different websites, and it's really useful, I think, because at the end you don't have time to read everything that it's on the internet.
Mm-hmm, yeah.
So if someone finds that something that is really interesting and shares there, you can be like 95% sure that it's going to be an interesting article also for you, because we are people that share the same criteria at the hour of like goals or play style and things like that.
And what's the name of your Facebook group?
Team La Comarca. La Comarca is the group of the Lord of the Rings village where Frodo Bolsón was living. In Spanish is La Comarca, and that's our name.
That's awesome. So I do want to remind the Prodigies before we close up. If you want to connect with Sergio, you can find him on Twitter. He's at No Es Mi Tipo, and that's where you can find him on Twitter. So reach out to him, say thanks for being on the show. If you are, you know, a Spanish player, then maybe look up his group, and if you're cool, I guess he'll let you in. So, and Sergio, yeah. What is one last piece of guidance you have for us? Either something you already said you want to emphasize or something new you want to leave with us here at the end.
Yeah, I want to emphasize in one thing that I repeated several times in the interview is like, practice a lot, comment with your friends, try to analyze each game, don't let bad luck make you feel bad about the game or, I don't know, have bad feelings. one day you win, another day you lose. At the end, if you keep some constants and you try to play frequently and with players that provide you of useful tools for improving in the game, you are going to have good results.
Love it. Sergio, thank you so much for sharing your time and for sharing your stories with us. I want to acknowledge you for your contributions to the multiverse.
Yeah.
You are a hero among planeswalkers, and it's been a blast chatting with you. May you never be mana screwed, always draw what you need, and depart every plane victorious.
Thank you. Thank you very much for inviting me to this show, and yeah, I have enjoyed the interview too.
Thank you, Sergio, one more time for coming on to the show. Loved having you here. Episode 237 is in the books. So, as always, you know where to find the show notes. They will be at mtgprotutor.com/Sergio Feder. So look them up there and you'll find links to any resources that were mentioned, as well as a synopsis of what we talked about. So before we close out, I want to remind you, if you want to jump into the Ixalan Sealed League, go to mtgprotutor.com/sealed league, and I'll redirect you to the event that we have inside the Prodigy Facebook group. So details will be posted there, but basically right now are sign-ups. So just come in there, say that you're interested in joining, and we will give you the details as to what to do next as we get closer to the sign-up cutoff date. And finally, this show would not be possible without the patrons. So thank you so much for your direct support. It really means a lot to me. mtgprotutor.com/Patreon is where you can go to learn more about that. And a huge thank you to Paragon City Games for providing the prize support for the patrons as well as the leagues that we run, and for their sweet offer of giving out a free booster pack to any player who wears a MTG Pro Tutor t-shirt to the Ixalan pre-release or release events that they're holding at their store in Draper, Utah. Again, so if you are in the area for the pre-release or release of Ixalan and you want to swing by Paragon City Games, then by all means, wear an MTG Pro Tutor shirt and get hooked up with a free booster pack. So that's it for the show. Thanks so much for all your love and support. Can't wait to do this again. And until then, I am Sean of The Gathering, and we will see you in the next cast.
This round of MTG Pro Tutor is over. So you don't miss a single episode of MTG Mastery. Be sure to subscribe to the show on your preferred podcast listening service for more exclusive interviews, deck building tips, and elite content. Or visit mtgprotutor.com to stream it straight from the source. We look forward to helping you think and play like a pro.